supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Reality mars the romance of A Rendezvous with Mars. Let's burst some bubbles with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, we have this goal in mind, man mission to Mars. Not so easy.
Not so easy at all. If we look at the history of Mars missions, which include orbiters and robot explorers being launched from different countries around the world, what we find is that the United States has been extraordinarily lucky in its ability to get almost every one of its landers on the surface safely. That's not true of other countries around the world for whatever reason.
And when we're considering a manned mission, of course you want to minimize that luck factor.
Yeah, you want to minimize that luck factor, reduce the risk as much as you can. But National Geographic actually has a television series on right now called Mars, in which they do two things. They juxtapose our knowledge and ideas, concepts, and sort of dreams about going to Mars as we see it today, with a fictional story of the first explorers to go to Mars, in which a group of six, I believe it is, goes to attempt a landing on Mars to establish a base for exploration. And even before they land the spacecraft on Mars, the calamities start to pile up. So this begins to illuminate how, it is said by others, Mars will try to kill humans in 1,000 different ways.
Should we put men and women in potential harm's way, or can good science be done with rovers?
Oh, great science can be done with rovers. There's no question about it. In fact, there's a very strong argument that there's no need to send humans into space to explore at all because the risk is just too great. The benefits that can be gathered by robotic spacecraft are high enough that it doesn't warrant putting humans at risk. Space exploration is inherently challenging and hard. All we've done is to throw huge amounts of dollars at minimizing the risk to the greatest degree possible and taking the most careful steps in space exploration that we can with the least amount of risk. Now, everyone knows that I'm a big romantic advocate for space exploration, human space exploration. Yeah, that's true. But I also am not looking at this through rose-colored glasses. It's all a game of how do we minimize, how do we drive risk as close to zero as possible for human exploration.
Hey, the risk is near zero of heading out of doors and looking aloft in the night sky, unless you happen to get in the way of a man-made meteor project.
Yeah, when we think about going outside to observe the night sky, we think, oh, perfectly safe. We don't have to worry about anything falling from the sky, harming us, or anything from space. However, we think of meteor showers as a natural phenomenon in which we can go out and see particles of rock falling into the Earth's atmosphere. They heat the Earth's atmosphere as they come in, cause the glow, the beautiful streak that we see, and we call them shooting stars or falling stars. There is a group in Japan that's now proposing a study of how meteoroids interact with the Earth's atmosphere as they fall in during a meteor shower. The proposal includes a 20-inch by 20-inch by 20-inch satellite cube that would drop into the Earth's atmosphere from orbital altitude, ball-bearing-sized pellets of various chemical elements that would glow different colors as they fall into the Earth's atmosphere, thus creating an artificial meteor shower.
What a fireworks display.
Well, you might think it would be a fireworks display. It's not quite as natural and random as a normal natural meteor shower. This project proposes dropping one of these ball bearings every second until it runs out of its supply of about 500 maybe. So that means the shower would last about 8 minutes. But there's also a rumor that the company has proposed doing this display as part of the opening ceremonies for the 2020 Japanese Olympics. Not confirmed yet, but who knows what could happen in the next few years.
Regarding that night sky, 'tis the season, but which season?
Right. Well, if you're out observing, you might notice that we can see the constellations of three seasons. If we look over to the west at 8 p.m., we can still see the major summer constellations, Cygnus, Lyra, and Aquila the Eagle. If we look directly overhead at that time, we can see the Great Square of Pegasus, which is the main constellation of the fall sky. And over in the east, just 15 to 20 degrees above the horizon. At that same time is the main constellation of winter, Orion the Hunter. So we have a wide variety that shows us that time is passing, an interesting way to see that the year is progressing, with the summer constellations over on the west heading down for the season, our main constellation for this season overhead, and winter making its way up in the east. And if perhaps you're looking for some sort of interesting astronomical holiday gift, the Delaware Valley Amateur Astronomers has their annual astronomy equipment and accessory auction coming up this Friday at the regular monthly meeting at the Radnor Township Municipal Building. And it's a great group to sort of peek in and see what they're doing while you find some interesting astronomical gift for that special starry-eyed person in your family. You can find more information at their website at dvaa.org.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.